First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Welcome to the BS Report. A chilly but sunny Monday here in Southern California. We are doing a mega playoff podcast. Bill Barnwell, Aaron Schatz, Chad Millman, and Mike Lombardi all coming up later. Starting us off, the world's biggest Tebow fan, our pal Cousin Sal. What's happening?
What is happening with you? I just have to say, you know, when anyone who says God doesn't have a sense of humor, I know, like, kids go missing and there's tsunami disasters and stuff,
yeah.
But God has a sense of humor. He really does. If you watched the late game yesterday, that's one thing that approves.
We watched the game together at Shakey's, which is a whole other story. But
yeah.
It actually makes you angry. It was fun watching you actually get angry every time he completed a pass. It enraged you almost.
I take it personally how much delight you get in all this. I really do. And I know some of it was because you were rooting for possibly a favorable matchup for the Patriots next week, which I'm thinking,
I would say
now,
most
that
of it.
If you had to change, what would you do right now? I mean, a Steelers team who was struggling to stay alive, or this Broncos team that now believes that they can win?
No, I'd much rather play the Broncos. You crazy? Come on. They barely win that game.
The what?
They played as well as they could play offensively, and they barely won that game. I'd much rather play the Broncos.
I don't know. I'm telling
Plus
you.
Plus, the Eric Decker.
Yeah.
Eric Decker going out was a big deal on that cheap hit by James Harrison.
Much different team than the one that beat you guys in the beginning of the year. They aged like 6 years to a man in the last 10 weeks. But But you're winning that. Yeah, you're going to win that game. I'm not worried
about that. All right, settle down with the we're definitely winning. Just settle down with that already. You got to hand it to Tebow, though. He was brilliant in that game. I'm going to give him the brilliant. Quote, unquote, brilliant.
He was, and it's weird, and I deserve everything I get. And he was completely opposite of what we're used to. He lit it up in the first half, and then in the second half they only scored 3 points. But and so you figure they're dead. That's it. And then in overtime, he right back out. Huge, big plays, more than 4 or 5 big plays, and I give it to him. That's it.
It was certainly the most dramatic playoff game. I'm trying. What was the last great round one playoff game? I guess maybe Arizona Green Bay. I'm just thinking of stuff that jumps to my head. I can't remember being more riveted by a round one game that didn't involve the Patriots. And the ending, none of us were expecting that. I watch sports all the time, and I think, all right, what's going to happen here? You know, you're always mulling over the possibilities. Never in a million years thought that was going to be one play and over in the overtime. We were just flabbergasted by that.
I feel like it doesn't even count because I was looking down. I think I was bad mouthing Tebow to our friend Jamie, and then next thing you know, Moore's like sprinting down the sideline. But that was something else. And I'm like, oh, this is great. That new overtime rules, and thank God for the new overtime. It's such a different game now. I'm like, yeah, Denver should get the ball first. This is great. Now, then Pittsburgh will know exactly what they need to do to win the game, and not even a chance. They shut me up easily. And you know what? You touched on it earlier with the Shakey's thing. I think we should talk about it for a second. We have our fantasy banquet, our fantasy football banquet, which you quit in the middle of the week, by the way. You quit fantasy football, as you do almost every year. I think
I do.
Now 6 more weeks of winter or something because Simmons quit fantasy football. But now you're reconsidering. But anyway, we have our banquet at Shakey's. And for those of you who don't have a Shakey's pizza chain in your region of the country you live in, congratulations, first of all. But how would you explain it? It's about the crappiest pizza you could get, right?
It's terrible pizza in a really weird, bad part of Los Angeles. And maybe the highlight for us was we had a couple sitting right near us that we realized was actually, I guess you'd say a transvestite, but was also about 20 years older than the guy she was with, and
right.
We didn't realize that it was somebody who might have been a prostitute, we're guessing, that he decided to take to Shakey's for the day.
A transvestite and a homeless man. Maybe I give the transvestite too much credit, thinking that she had a home, but and they were sort of getting it on right in front of us.
Yeah, it seemed like he brought her to Shakey's. Maybe it's a horrible place.
And add to that, so towards the end of the day, we're sensed there's a gas leak. We all smell it. Like, oh, there's a gas leak in here. But this game's going to overtime. We can't leave. This is how much we love football. This is right. the best. And then I'm like, terrible pizza, the transvestite giving happy endings right in front of us. There's a gas leak. Tebow comeback. This is hell for me. This is exactly what I picture hell like. And, I mean, really, I couldn't write it out any different.
We told the manager that we thought there was a gas leak because we smelled gas, and her answer was, well, we don't use gas here. We're like, all right, well, I guess we don't all smell an overwhelming stench of gas.
And our
it was a memorable day.
Called her a liar. He's like, you're a liar. I'll never believe a word you say. She walked away. Confused.
It's certainly America's worst tradition, but it led to a really memorable Denver-Pittsburgh game. Hey, you know, I got to say, you enjoy gambling and gambling on football and thinking about football as much as anyone I've ever met in my life.
Yeah.
After we had three home team favorites cover in a row in games that kind of went the way you thought they would have gone, they were all blowouts, there was no real drama. Everything pointed to that Denver-Pittsburgh game, something weird happening, and yet your hatred for Tebow, you just refused to see it.
No, I saw it, and I was nervous. I just I put on a brave face. But it is a dumb thing, right? Like, I could scream about how Denver's going to get shut out 23-0 all week, and then three favorites come in, and I'm like, oh, boy. And why should it matter for this Denver-Pittsburgh game whether Detroit got the backdoor cover or not? It really shouldn't, but, like, you and I, we really do think of it that way, and I do feel like there wasn't going to be four favorites covering, no matter what.
Did we mention that the old transvestite hooker had no teeth? I feel like that was a crucial part of the story that we didn't mention. The no teeth pushed it over the top.
We should get her on with Lombardi. That'd be a mega, mega podcast.
We also didn't mention that in one of the worst parenting decisions of all time, you brought your son Archie.
I had no idea. The transvestite. Some of the guys hadn't seen him in a while. I figured it'd be a nice thing.
We were doing fake speeches about how you'd explain it to Archie. Like, son, sometimes a man falls in love with another older, toothless man who dresses like a woman, and they go to a pizza place. Yeah, that was terrible. I went home and I took a shower.
Did you?
I didn't wash my hands. I was like, you know, I'm going full shower to get the shaky stench off me.
Next year will be better. Subway is loving this, right? I mean, we're really now they've dominated Shakey's as far after.
Yeah, they did. Subway's killed Shakey's. So we got round two coming up. Some interesting matchups, and it really does seem like the NFC games are somewhere between 7 and 20 times more compelling, just from a competitive standpoint, than the AFC matchups, because you have T.J. Yates going to Baltimore. On paper, it's really hard to talk yourself into a rookie QB who, I think he made one throw on Saturday, and then you have Tebow.
If you didn't like Dalton going to the Texans, it's sort of the same thing here. You don't like Yates going to Baltimore, but.
And then you have Tebow and the Broncos coming off this exhilarating Sunday night win. Nobody believed in them. What a win, a miracle, all that stuff. Now they have to play 6 days later in New England.
Yeah.
A team that already killed them about 5-6 weeks ago.
Right.
But then you flip over the NFC. You have this Giants team that really seems like it might be coming together against a banged-up Green Bay team that didn't end the season great. And then you have... in the other game, San Francisco, New Orleans, clearly the game of the day.
That's the first one of the weekend. And it's weird because there's out of the four games, New Orleans, San Fran, I think, is the most competitive. And then the other three are rematch games. And, like, the old me, I don't know about you, the old me would have put all three favorites on a three-team money line parlay or teaser or whatever and say, yep, New England, Baltimore, Green Bay, all advancing. But I think I'm... The new me will probably put twice as much on and lose, but one of those three is losing, don't you think?
You'd think. And, then, you know, you just made the case last week with Pittsburgh. Everybody threw them into a tease, I think, especially when it stayed at 8.5. And, you know, anytime there's a tease that's a little too obvious, you should always have the red flag up in the playoffs.
Yeah. I mean, I love New England and Green Bay to advance, but it does seem it seems too easy.
I don't know if I love Green Bay.
No?
I like the way the Giants are playing. You know, one of the rules with round two is you can't get swept up with what happened in round one. It's way too easy to come off round one and go, oh, they look great. Oh, they're, you know, I think everybody's really excited about Houston's defense right now.
Yeah.
Because they played so well, but they played really well against a poorly coached Cincy team who had a rookie QB who had a bad game. And couldn't run the ball. And, you know, now they're going against Ray Rice in Baltimore. Baltimore is a great home field advantage. They've had some rest. They can make some plays with their receivers. They have veteran defense. It's a little bit of a different situation. Let's talk. What's the Saturday? What's the first game on Saturday?
First game, New Orleans at San Francisco, 4:30 Eastern.
That's a nice one. That's a nice one. I mailed you my pick for the – we emailed the picks ahead of time because it's just too easy to see them at this point. I said New Orleans by 3.5.
All right. I said 3. I struggle with this. I'm like – for some reason, I was like, oh, maybe San Fran. Like, no, people are going to bet New Orleans. It's got to be at least 3. I went with 3. You went with 3.5. It is 3.5. You nailed it exactly.
Ooh.
So you're up 1-0 on me.
So New Orleans outdoors a lot – different than New Orleans indoors, but everybody's saying that it might be like 60 degrees for that game.
It's supposed to be pretty mild, and I don't know what to take from that New Orleans team. I know you have to get them on off of turf to have a chance. I also think out of the 8 quarterbacks, let me ask you this. Out of the 8 quarterbacks, if you're down 13-3, where do you rank Alex Smith in terms of how confident you are for a comeback out of the 8?
Flacco. I'd have T.J. Yates and Flacco tied for last.
Really? Flacco?
Yeah. Yeah, Flacco.
Flacco worse than Smith.
Because we've seen San Fran come back from that. And also, they're a team that when they fall down 13-3, they don't change what they're doing. They stick with what got them there. They don't panic and start throwing every down, all that stuff. Flacco, right. I think Flacco is one of those QBs that when he has a lead, he seems fine, and when he's trailing, it's a different story. And I thought you were going to ask me out of the good QBs, who do I trust the most? Because you even saw it a tiny bit on Saturday night. Breeze can look sketchy from time to time.
Yeah,
more than Brady and Rodgers, I think.
And the Lions had some tough. I mean, they screwed themselves too. But you got to catch interceptions. If Breeze throws it in the spread basket, you have to corral that. You're not going to get that back. But
yeah, that was a weird game because you know I really felt like the Saints could have had 60 points and should have.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, I felt like the Lions kind of blew a potential upset there.
Yeah,
which
yeah,
is
definitely.
Weird. Those two sentences don't make sense, but. You know,
no,
the
know
Saints were
saying.
Just
it was a weird enough game, and at 14-10 at half, you certainly thought, "Wow, they're going to cover this game. They sort of have their number here tonight." But
the Saints were dying to keep the Lions in that game.
Yeah,
drop passes. They were ready. Dropped interceptions, all kinds of stuff. Mm-hmm. And the one thing you got to take away from that game is that Calvin Johnson. He's almost on that Bo Jackson athletic level now, right?
Yeah, it's sort of ridiculous. It really is. I mean, you should go to a guy like that 15 times. Like Stafford's smart. Just target him all day, all night long, and,
really
and things will happen. That was one of my props I hit. Calvin Johnson will score. I think all the Calvin Johnson props came in. So, but.
You know, looking at that Lions team going forward, I do think, you know, that's a team that is a couple moves away from being right there with everybody. Mm-hmm. We always hear that running backs don't matter, and I don't think they do. But you at least have to have confident ones. And I think that was what killed them more than anybody. They couldn't run the ball at all. You at least have to.
Well, we're watching a game where neither team could kill the clock. And that seems to happen a lot in these games. So I think that was the Lions' problem. The game was just a little too long.
All right, Saturday night, Denver at New England. God forbid this was a Sunday. I hate these Saturday night games. Weird things happen.
You hey, imagine how bad it would be if you had a wedding to go to.
Yeah, I'm going to be – I'm already resigned to just something terrible happening. I'm going to be at a wedding. I'm going to have my iPad with me that will hopefully have some sort of live streaming channel. And I'll probably have 50 people huddled around me watching my iPad as people pretend to as people pretend there's not a wedding reception going on.
As a garter hits you in the head. Yeah, yeah. I think, you know, you're going cross-country for that. I think people should pencil in this Saturday night. As long as Brady's quarterback, the Pats are going to get this game. So don't get married if you're in the New England area on this second Saturday of the playoff run.
Just
but what do you think?
I have I struggled with this. You could have talked me into a single-digit line, but wow. I went Pats by 10.5. I thought that was fair.
All right, you said 10.5. I said 11.5. It's 13.5, and was 14 for a little bit.
Wow! Now that
all
surprised
four of these
me.
Games, they the three big games, they're pounding the underdogs, and they got it down. So 13.5.
So it started at 14.5, and it dropped to 13.5.
I think it was 14, and went to 13.5.
Wow! That seems like a lot, Sal.
It's
a lot
is
of
a
points,
lot, but. How can you make it any less? And plus, now you have the Josh McDaniels factor. He's going to be lurking there. Like, what was it in the Cobra Kai when the Sensei was supposed to be dead in, like, Karate Kid 3, and then he pops up?
I think he comes out of the studio, yeah.
Yeah, that's the Denver's going to be like, whoa, where did he come from?
He pops up behind a cutout,
right.
The other guy, and they do the evil laugh, fold their arms. Yeah.
That's it.
I think that line's too high. And also, like, that means the money line's got to be, like, what, Denver plus 650?
Oh, yeah. Easily, yeah. It could be 800 or 900, depending on what casino it is, yeah.
I will say, I thought Denver's defense played as well as I've seen them play in a while.
Yeah.
It seemed like Von Miller, maybe he's getting used to that cast or whatever, but that was the best game I've seen him play in about 6 weeks.
He had pressure on Roethlisberger. Yeah, they were all over the place. And conversely, I know we'll give Tebow all the credit in the world, but could the Steelers' defense, could they make one play? I mean, they jumped on a fumble late, but really,
yeah.
I mean, Woodley, Polamalu, Harrison, Ike Taylor, make one play between them.
It was a really interesting ADR touchdown because did you read that stat? Anytime, like 22 or 23 times they had sent the wide receiver in motion, they ran. So when that guy went in motion, Pittsburgh must have been locked into this mindset of anytime that guy goes in motion, they're running. And that number 29, the Ryan Clark's replacement, moved up.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just burned him. They were sitting on that play. What's weird is that I don't know why they didn't use that in the last 3 minutes of regulation. It was almost like they saved it for OT. But
yeah,
you know,
because it's not as dramatic that way. What do you mean you don't know why? What's
I guess.
God's plan.
You weren't a little freaked out that Tebow finished with 316 passing yards?
Well, I said under 149 was my big prop bet of the year, so yeah, he had to at least double it. Yeah.
No, but
yeah,
I mean that he finished with 316 is a little weird.
Oh, yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah, Tim 316, that's the big thing, yeah.
Do you think it's weird that Demaryius Thomas's name could easily be inserted into the Age of Aquarius song?
Ooh, interesting.
This is the dawning of the age of Demaryius. Like, there's weird stuff going on now, Sal.
It is all weird, and it's great. And listen, I get it that Tim Tebow and Yates have as many wins as Tony Romo in the playoffs. And I don't need to hear that anymore.
You know,
but
yeah,
it's got to be it. I'm honestly going to be mad at you if the Patriots don't take care of business and win this week. I'm going to be mad at you.
They
have to win, and it can't really be close. Because you rooted hard for this, and now it's here.
Well, the Eric Decker going out, really. The Broncos had Willis, number 12. I think that's his name, Willis.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a third guy who I don't even know what his name was, and that was their third receiver.
Yeah.
And you just think, like, it's the perfect matchup of no-name wide receivers against no-name defensive backs. Like, just could not have gone better for the Patriots from that standpoint. And
yeah, right.
I also thought McGahee had a crummy game yesterday, and then we talked on the podcast like 6-7 weeks ago wondering whether he'd wear down. I feel like he's worn down. Like I know Pittsburgh was swarming, but he didn't look like himself yesterday. He looks tired. And you know, just seems like they're catching this Denver
team. It's taking its toll on some of these guys, for sure.
Yeah, he hadn't had 300 carries in a season for like 4 or 5 years.
Right.
So
now, all that said, the Patriots, they had the secondary. How scared are they supposed to be? And again, giving Tebow all the credit in the world, he didn't complete his 10th pass until overtime.
Right.
I think they're scared just enough to be like, all right, this guy can win a game on his own, but let's not get crazy, right?
Well, if you're the Broncos, you want to do that, you know, run the clock down, shorten the game, do the whole thing.
Yeah,
hope you get a couple plays. Champ Bailey's had a good history against the Patriots over the years. Denver's had a good history in the playoffs against the Patriots.
That's true.
In fact, I only think we've played them twice, and we lost both. We lost that.
They killed you that one Saturday night. They won by like 14 points, I remember, in Champ Bailey.
All right, so the Jake Plummer thing. But
right. That
was the game when Ben Watson tackled Champ Bailey and it went out of bounds on the one, but they didn't know whether it was a touchdown or not, and somehow they didn't have the technology to figure it out.
Right.
I still think he fumbled and it was a touchback, and I still count that as a Patriots win, even though we lost.
Right.
And then
right.
The other one was 1986, Rulon Jones sacked Tony Eason.
Oh, yeah.
We're down 20-17 with 3 minutes left, and effing Tony Eason takes a safety. One of the all-time worst Patriot losses. I mean, really? You're going to take a safety with 3 minutes left? We're down three? Was it. He never made it in New England after that.
You think, where does that rank in terms of bulletin board material for Belichick's Patriots?
Those two Denver losses?
There was a guy named Tony Eason. Now, listen up here. Listen up.
It's a safety. 3 minutes left. How do you take a safety?
It better not be close. I'm telling you now.
So Sunday we have...
Houston and Baltimore kicked it off at 1 Eastern.
I guess 6.5 for this. I think I'm low.
All right. I said 7. Yeah, it is 7.5. And it was 8.5 and 9 in some places. So that went. People are pounding the underdog so far.
Yeah, you hate to put everything on T.J. Yates, but he has to have at least a competent game. You're not going to win on the road without having your quarterback make at least 3-4 plays. They're going to swarm the run. They're gonna just shade everything to Andre Johnson's side, and then T.J. Yates will have to pick them apart.
It's funny. You said the same. You said it earlier. You said you can't give too much stock in what happened in round one. Like, they played Cincinnati and they beat up on them. But on the other hand, there's always a team in this round that has a bye that doesn't show up for at least a half and sometimes the whole game. So
you are correct, sir.
How do you counter that? You have to figure that out. And maybe this is that game. But
a great example, Arizona and
Carolina. Yeah.
The Jake Delhomme 5-interception game.
Right.
Everybody penciled in Carolina to that next round. I think they were given double digits.
Oh, yeah. It was 13, I think.
And I think they lost like 36-13, something like that. But, yeah, there's always, somebody always lays a stink bomb in this round, too.
Mm-hmm. This could be it. This could be it. And then Giants at Green Bay.
It's a nice ender. I like that. I like that this is the last game.
Yeah, this is as much as I hate them, this is better than Atlanta, Green Bay.
I went single digits for this. I said Green Bay by 9, and it might even be lower than that.
All right, I said 9 also, and it is 8.5, and it was a little higher and went lower. So I win 3-2 this week. But
oh, congrats, buddy.
Yeah, so we said whoever wins week 19 wins the whole thing, right?
I forgot. Damn.
I think Aaron Ross is a huge, huge element to this in figuring out if they're going to win, but...
Yeah, well, he's kind of like he was their Terrence Newman. Like, he wasn't good, but they have nobody else who could even play. And removing him from it, I don't know. I mean, they might be able to rush Green Bay with 4 guys and just play, like, you know, have drop 7 guys back and do it that way. I think they have a chance. I like this Giants team.
They do. Again, they played earlier this year. That some say they won. There's a questionable call in the end zone, but at least Green Bay has to be scared a little bit. Like, Baltimore, to me, is the only one who is not scared off by their opponent this week, I think. Like, New England has to have seen the Tebow stuff, and they know that Denver might be coming for revenge. Same thing with Green Bay and the Giants. I don't know. I don't know what to say. They're my kryptonite, the Giants. I have to stay away from it.
It really makes you angry when the Giants do well.
Well, I hate that the two forces, giant mega forces, are playing against me here. Like, Tebow and the Giants. One of them is going to advance to crucify me, no pun intended, for another week, I think. But, yeah, the Giants, that was terrible, that Atlanta play calling. I mean, they beat up the Atlanta, but what are they doing? I blame Tom Brady for these quarterback sneaks for over a yard. I think he makes it look so easy. He sneaks from 2.5 yards. And then you got, like, these string bean quarterbacks doing it, and they're not even close to making it. And Matt Ryan, I don't know. Did you fire that coach?
Hey, the only thing I didn't like, we're going to talk to Bill Barnwell about this in a second. I didn't like that he switched his philosophy. He went for it, then he didn't, then he did again. It's like if you're going to go for it, you got to go for it. You can't decide situation by situation what your philosophy is going to be. I would compare it to blackjack. You either hit on 16 or you don't.
That's good. You can't
hit on it one hand and then the next hand you don't hit on it. That was my issue with that.
Well, but he went twice on fourth and one. Didn't he sneak it twice?
No, but then there was the one time when he didn't.
It was
fourth and inches on the 40 and he punted.
Yeah.
And it's like, all right, buddy, you gotta pick one at this. Pick a side at this point.
Yeah.
I'm
always like, we're like, fire this coach, fire this coach. Do you see some of these names interviewing?
Marty Schottenheimer's back, possibly.
Marty Schottenheimer, Brad Childress, Wade Phillips. What do you need to see out of Wade Phillips? He's a great defensive coordinator, and he's going to be the Bucs guy. And Joe DeCamillis is the Cowboys' special teams coach. He's he's interviewing for Jacksonville. Are these teams crazy?
I think we're at the point where we could see the co-coach thing. Why not?
Yeah.
The offensive defensive coordinator, and then just hire a third guy just to make sure you don't screw up challenges.
I was going to say no coach, but wouldn't you have thought Jim Harbaugh would have, that's the idea now is to go through the college ranks and try to find a winning formula?
Yeah.
Last
thing we'll say about Denver. That's a pretty high, like, you always have the rule in the playoffs. If whoever you think is going to win, you pick them. And if you don't think they're going to win, then just lay the points no matter whatever it is.
Yeah.
For Denver to cover and win that 13-point spread would be something that's happened maybe, what, six times in the last decade? I know the Patriots did it twice in 2002.
What do you mean? Cover and win? To be a double-digit
underdog. But we've seen some 10 and 10.5ers, but to win a 13.5 point underdog thing, the Giants in the Super Bowl 42, the Patriots twice in 2002, I'm sure it's happened one or two other times, but that's something that happens
You said Carolina, Arizona.
I think that was like, 10.5. I don't, like, 13 is a different animal. That's basically
two
touchdowns.
Now, you will, Billy, if I may ask, you will become more or less nervous as the week wears on.
Nervous.
Monday, Wednesday. Let me go over the days of the week again. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. More nervous.
Friday, I'm going to be super nervous.
Wow.
Yeah. This Tebow thing's, it's crazy. It's really, like, it stopped making sense a month ago. So.
You should have rooted for the Steelers with the rest of us. Damn it.
Yeah, I still would have been more scared of the Steelers. I'll take my chances with Tim Tebow. Cousin Sal, anything to plug?
Jimmy Kimmel Live tonight, Channing Tatum, The Bachelor's on tonight. Later in the week, Randy Jackson, Woody Harrelson, and an up-and-comer named Meryl Streep. And then on Grantland, my props. Actually, even though all the Tebow stuff went away, I turned the profit this week. So Thursday, more gold.
Congratulations, buddy.
All right.
We'll talk to you next week.
You.
Good job by you.
See you later.
See you.
All right. See you later, man.
Bye, cuz. All right. We're bringing in Bill Barnwell from Grantland.com. He's been writing just about every day during the playoffs so far. And he defended Atlanta Falcons coach Mike Smith today. I thought you made some good points. Why don't you sum up your argument quickly, and then I'll try to pick it apart like Drew Brees.
Well, basically, my argument is that you can't base your evaluation of a decision solely upon the outcome because it's a small sample size. You know, you can make the right decision to throw a bomb deep to a wide receiver if he's wide open. If he drops it, it's not like it was a terrible decision to throw the pass. It's just a bad outcome. You have to really evaluate decisions with what you know at the time when you make the decision. And in each case, when Mike Mularkey and Mike Smith chose to go for it, they were making decisions that, on average, will score them more points. And you can say, okay, the Giants got a great push up front, and I for sure think they did. And I thought the second play call, that second quarterback sneak, was abysmal. But I have no qualms about that first decision to go for it, and I really think that they got an unfair amount of criticism just solely based upon the fact that it didn't work out. Whereas Tom Coughlin and Kevin Gilbride decided to go for it on 4th-and-1 inside the Falcons' 5-yard line, and a lot of the same criticisms would apply to that same argument. And they haven't received a single bit of flack because, of course, they succeeded.
All right. Let's break this down. Here's my biggest issue with this, with what Mike Smith did. He went for it on 4th-and-inches, didn't get it. The next time around, I think it was 4th-and-1 at like the 40, Giants 41, punted. You wrote about this in your column, didn't even do the whole let's line up like we're going for it and then take the 5-yard penalty and then punt it, because they'd already set up the fact that they were aggressive enough and willing enough to go for it on 4th-and-inches. The Giants would have bought that they were going for it. You might have been able to get a delay of game there. They took that option off the table, which was the dumbest decision of the game, I felt like. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely, absolutely. Especially because the first time, they actually went and did the perfect play that I've dreamt the NFL teams would do, that whole, oh, we're going to fake, going for it. We're going to do a hard count for 20 seconds and move all these guys around. And then they actually went for it, which was like, yep, just an awesome idea. It didn't work, but awesome idea. And then now that you set that up and now that you have that in every defensive lineman's head where we don't know if they're going to actually go for it, even if it looks like they're just faking going for it, why not try? I mean, there's no downside to it. If you get a false start, if you're never going to snap the ball, or the worst case, you take a delayed game penalty, you get 5 extra yards, you're punting from the Giants' 46-yard line instead of the Giants' 41-yard line. It's the same exact thing. It was really disappointing because, like you said, there's no reason not to do it, and they set it up perfectly on the previous play, and every NFL coach should do that, honestly.
All right, so now the third time around, 4th-and-inches again from, I think, the 20 or whatever, they decide to go for it this time. They run the same QB sneak they ran the first time that didn't work. That didn't work either. The Giants immediately score, and the game's over. And here's my issue with this, and this is – I read your column today. I was mad that you didn't mention this. Let's say we're at a blackjack table. I'm at third base. You're sitting to my right. 16 comes. You already have a double down bet on that. You have like 5 bets going in front of you. Now I'm at 16. Dealer has a 10. And I say, you know what? I'm going to hit this. And I don't get it, and then you lose your bets. You don't get mad at me because you're supposed to hit on 16. That's what you do. Next time around, I'm on 16 again. You have bets on the table. Comes to me, and I say, you know what? I'm not going to hit this time. Dealer has a 6, a 7, deals himself an 8. I would have won, but I never went for it. He wins. You lose your bets. Now you're mad at me. Third time comes around, same situation. And this time, I hit it again. Now you're sitting at me going, what happens? You move. You leave the table, right?
Of course I leave the table. I mean...
Okay, so why are you defending Mike Smith?
Because I'm an irrational blackjack player. I'm a way more rational football evaluator than I am blackjack player.
But he's the guy. He's the guy who can't decide whether he's sitting at 16 or not. He can't be defended.
he certainly... I agree with you. I think the second decision was wrong. I think you go for it all 3 times. If that's
yes.
criticism, I'm on board.
Yes,
I'll
that's
tell you,
my
they
criticism.
They need to go for it the second time. Or they need to at least fake going for it the second time.
I have two criticisms, actually. I know, like, statistically we can do all kinds of, hey, this works this percent of the time. But the QB sneak got stuffed. I don't know how you run that play back. I don't even, hey, this time it's going to work. Like, you have Matt Ryan who's – maybe he's just not that good at QB sneaks. I don't know what his QB – like, we all know Tom Brady is the master of the QB sneak. There's never been a
greater
QB sneaker of all time. Maybe Matt Ryan's not that good at it. You also have a really good front four against the Giants that I thought controlled most of that game against the Saints offensive line that wasn't good. And, you know, it's risky. I don't think it's the same kind of percentage that maybe it would be for some other teams. And also – I thought they had receivers open that whole game. If you're going
right.
4th-and-inches and you spread everybody out and you're saying we know we can throw for 2 yards right now, and maybe score a touchdown even. If I'm a Giants fan, I'm more scared of them doing that than doing a QB sneak.
I think that's what they tried to set up, that they were going to try and do that and then play the sneak off that, which obviously didn't work. But they did go to five wide, and I think they had Jones rotating like he was going to do an end around, which didn't make any sense. They should have just kept Jones out there for a pattern, even if they were going to run the sneak. I'm okay with the idea that they could have run a different play the second time. But, again, I don't think one play, one quarterback sneak is enough to tell me, okay, we're not going to get the next one if the quarterback sneak, you know, again, on average, we'll say it works 70% of the time. You know, you really can't say, okay, this one play failed, so we should never run this play again. I mean, think about, you know, basketball. Would you not get Ray Allen open for a three because he missed one three?
I would have gone shotgun, and I would have thrown it.
I think that's okay.
At least on one of those.
Yeah, I think it's worth considering. I mean,
Let's flip this around because you're a Giants fan.
I am a Giants,
you're a Giants fan.
Sure.
You're watching this game. The third time around, they spread everybody out, and he goes under center. And you're watching it, and I know you can deny it to your death. I know you're saying to yourself, I hope they're dumb enough to sneak it again because we're going to stuff this.
That's what you're saying to yourself
at that specific moment. You are.
No, I wasn't. I'll tell you what. When I was watching the Saints-Lions game on Saturday night, and I had, you know, I bet on the Lions, and they were lining up to go for it and fourth down, all I could think was, please change your mind and punt. Just please think you want to be conservative this one time. That was a situation where I thought, okay, I really don't want this team to go for it. With the Falcons thing, you know, I certainly had confidence in the Giants more so than the average team. I thought they were doing a really good job up front, like you were saying, and they were really executing well at the line of scrimmage, but it's not that hard to get 6 inches. It really just it's the simplest thing. And the Falcons didn't get it twice. It sucks, but I think it was still the right decision to try.
All right, we're gonna continue to argue about this at the Sloan Conference because I do feel like outcomes should matter a tiny bit. And
oh, they do.
And
but
I also think
you don't want to overreact to them. You don't want to say, okay,
no,
this happened once, so then we can totally eliminate what happened for the past year or the past 5 years off the table. I think that the actual game situation that you're in, that idea of, okay, the Giants are beating us up front, I think that does matter for sure. But we're talking about a situation where I think on that second play call, or this is the second time they went for it, they only need to succeed like under 40% of the time for it to be the right decision. And, I mean, the average is about 70%. So you're talking about almost half of what the average success rate is. So unless the Giants were playing maybe twice as good as the average defensive line, you know, I have to go with the idea that they were right to go for it.
The only thing I would say as a counter is the Falcons brought to that decision an inordinate amount of baggage from what happened to them in that 26-23 overtime loss to the Saints.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm Mike Smith, in the very back of my mind, I'm thinking to myself, if we don't get this, all of these guys I have that work for me that are trying to win this game are going to have flashbacks to that Saints game and the toughest loss we had all season. And now that doubt is going to seep into these guys that we can't get that yard when we really need it. Because now two times this season, we would have screwed it up. From that standpoint, I think you could make the case. Maybe you take the field goal. I agree with you. I agree with what you wrote today, though. The whole take the points when you're on the road thing makes no sense at all. And that's a stupid argument.
Yeah, well, let me ask you. You know, let's say the Falcons go for it and they're lining up to go for it. Don't you think that every player on that offensive line, every coach is saying, screw this. We have to get this. We have to get over this mental hurdle that we can get a fourth and one. And don't you think they're going to be extra motivated to get it and you know, maybe not give an extra effort, but really execute well and really give the best possible effort to getting it because of what happened in that previous game?
I would agree with that, except that they couldn't run the ball that whole game.
That's true.
And the advantage that they had in the game, I thought, was being able to throw the ball pretty quickly. It seemed like they had guys open that whole game. And, you know, the Giants pass rush came on as the game went along and all that stuff. But just as a Giants fan, weren't you sitting there going, why aren't they throwing it? We're giving them 10-yard cushions. Why aren't they just throwing short stuff nonstop? They would be moving down ball down the field every time.
Yeah, for sure. I really think they didn't adapt well. You know, that Falcons offense I wrote about in my preview was about that Roddy White 18-yard curl pattern and getting Julio Jones, you know, streaking across the field and going down the sidelines. And they didn't have the time for those routes to develop. And I thought that sort of the counter to that would be Tony Gonzalez and really him taking advantage of linebackers. And Tony Gonzalez just didn't have a big game. Certainly I was wrong about that. And I was, as a Giants fan, I was happy. But as a, you know, NFL evaluator, I was pretty disappointed in my evaluative abilities.
Here's the play I would have run as a longtime Madden person on the fourth and inches. I would have set Julio Jones in motion, like he was going to block to the left side, but then just kept him going and then done the quick slant. That's an unstoppable play. When has that play not worked?
The play I like is the Saints fourth down play, the one they ran for the 2-point conversion against the Colts.
Which one was that?
They have Lance Moore come across the formation in motion, and then he runs that kind of like quick out pattern.
Yeah, that's the one. That's what I was talking about. I shouldn't have said slant. I should have said out. He's in motion like he's going to block. Yeah, I love that play.
That play works 100% of the time.
And the other play that works 100% of the time is the handoff, like you're handing it off to the left, but then you keep it, you roll around, the tight end's blocking, but then he releases. That play works 100% of the time. The tight end on the other side from where you fake the handoff, he releases late. You just lob it over the other way toward him. It works every time.
That Texans play, that's like half of their offense right now is that Texans backdoor play.
Quick question, then we got to go. Giants in Green Bay this week. Giants have a lot of confidence right now. They can do two things phenomenally well. They can rush the passer, and they can break big plays with their receivers. And now they have Brandon Jacobs going, which I dropped him on my fantasy team midway through the season because it looked like he was just washed up. Now he looks like 1991 Christian Okoye again. I would argue you could do three things well now. Aaron Ross probably isn't playing. Can you hang with this Packers team?
I don't think so. I mean, if I'm being honest, no, I really don't think so. I think it's going to come down to essentially if you know, the elite Giants pass rush shows up, then yes. If everyone plays at a super high level, if, you know, Tuck and Umanyora and Pierre Paul are in Aaron Rodgers' face constantly, then yeah, they can compete. They can force a couple turnovers, and if they can avoid turnovers on their side of the ball, they can beat the Packers. But the odds of that happening are pretty slim. So I don't want to go out and say the Giants have no shot, but I really can't think that they should be anything better than probably 4-1 underdogs.
If you had to pick one thing to have defensively against this Packers team, though, wouldn't you pick a great front four?
It's a good question. Yeah, I think I would. I really don't think that when they've gone up against teams that have great cornerbacks, that the great cornerbacks have stopped them. So
yeah, it doesn't matter.
Absolutely. I'd want a disciplined front four that's going to keep Aaron Rodgers in the pocket. So I think once Aaron Rodgers gets out of the pocket, you're screwed. But if you can keep him in the pocket, you can slow him down a bit.
Because I would say it's a little reminiscent. Who'd they beat earlier this year? The Patriots? Who was the team they beat that had a good passing offense? And they just basically rushed the four guys and played a zone and just let the four guys do their thing. I think it was the Patriots, right?
Well, certainly. If not this game, that's the story of the Super Bowl. I mean, that's what they did. They put their front four out there, and, you know, Justin Tuck beat Logan Mankins to death halfway through the second quarter, and it was, you know, they didn't have a great secondary. They didn't have some elaborate blitz schemes. They just beat everyone up front.
Well, I know you have to do it as a Giants fan, but I think the way Green Bay finished the season, the way how banged up they are, how the Giants are playing, the fact that you can make big plays, you have two receivers that can catch the ball, you can run the ball, the line seems a little high to me. And I'm sure Green Bay could win by 25 and make that moot, but the Giants can win that game. Like, I don't feel like Houston can go into Baltimore and win unless some really crazy stuff happens. But I do think the Giants could win in Green Bay if a lot of things went right for them. So, you know, considering it's a 9-8 team, that's a pretty good spot to be in.
I suppose. You know, certainly I'm with you on I'm used to not being able to beat Baltimore unless Joe Flacco just implodes, you know, to some sort of ridiculous extent.
Right. All right, well, I'm going to come to Vegas, play blackjack with you, and hit on 16 and then not hit, and then see if I can drive you crazy in like 20 minutes.
I'm going to run away. I'm like I told you, a rational blackjack player, very rational NFL decision maker, evaluator.
All right. Bill Barnwell, we will check you out all week on Grantland.com. You've been doing great NFL playoff stuff. I encourage everyone to read it, and we will talk to you next week.
Thanks, Bill.
Part two of the Mega Playoff Podcast coming up with Mike Lombardi, Aaron Schatz, and Chad Millman. Check that out on ESPN.com's Pod Center or iTunes starting now.
So I get to sign off. Whoa.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at Pod Center at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.